Philip Ree, thank you so much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, Scott. I'm very good. This is very exciting.
I was just thinking about remembering the time that I saw Best of the Best. And I guess it was 1989, and that would have made me 13 years old. But it's funny how I can remember parts of my life and ages that I was from the films that I saw. And Best of the Best, man. Best of the Best was a great film, brilliant movie.
Thank you,
And
Scott.
that kind of came out of nowhere for me. So I can't wait to talk to you about that. But first of all, Philip, I know that you are very, very experienced in Taekwondo. Is it Taekwondo
Actually, we did a combination of Taekwondo, Hapkido. I went to Muay Thai. My brother Simon Ree went into Wing Chun with Chris Chan in San Francisco. So we original style is Taekwondo and Hapkido. Then we reached out to different masters because we wanted to learn various of different techniques. Because as you know, Taekwondo is great in terms of kicking, and it's the best, but it lacks hands. It lacks hand, traditional Taekwondo. The Hapkido is great for throwing and joint manipulations, but they don't use elbows and knees. So when my brother and I, we started to train, we were able to combine various different martial arts. Because long time ago, the martial art industry, where they would say, oh, Taekwondo is best, Kung Fu is no good. And then somebody said, well, Kung Fu is the best, Hapkido no good, Judo is the best, you know? And for us, my brother and I, we said, no. Every style has beauty and power. And we need to adopt that instead of rejecting it. And so we had respect for various different martial arts, not just for Taekwondo and Hapkido.
But so you grew up in Korea then?
That is correct, yes.
South Korea, and how old were you when you moved to the States?
I'm 9 years old.
Did your father do martial arts, or did he just?
My, definitely my father. Yes, he was a master, yes.
Oh,
So,
right, I did not know this. Oh, please tell us, let the audience know how you got started in martial arts then, and who your father was.
my father, I mean, he has something that I don't have. And what that is that he has, in the Chinese reference, qi. So what was really interesting, my father's hand, when he hits something, everything breaks.
Really?
Breaks. When I hit somebody, may hurt them, but it doesn't break. And I saw this with my own eyes, where in San Francisco there was an altercation. A guy who came up to my father and started to mouthing off, and he said, "Stop, stop!" And he started to come towards him, and my father just went boom. All of a sudden, just like that. And then it broke his jaw. And that was it. He was hardcore. My father was very hardcore.
And is that, are we just talking about legitimate chi energy, or are we just talking about a guy that can punch really hard?
No. His hands, certain people have that chi in their hands, and when they use it, it breaks. It breaks bones. I don't have that.
Is that something you can develop, or you either got it or you haven't?
I think that's something that you're born with.
Yeah. So you and your brother Simon, were you made to do martial arts? Just like, this is what you're going to do because I'm your dad and I'm a master. You guys are going to do it too.
in terms of in Korea, all the, you know, especially boys and men, they all have to train. And in Korea, everybody has to go to the military. If you're a boy, you're going to the martial arts school, taekwondo school. It's almost a mandatory. It helps in respect to learning respect and discipline, which I think is very important.
Is it something that is taught in the military as well, taekwondo?
Yeah, it is.
South Korea, is that mandatory as well?
That is correct. They're called ROKAS. ROKAS is Republic of Korean Army. And those guys are really, really, excuse my French, they're badasses. They train probably four times a day, every 2 hours. There was no choice because there's a north and south, there's a border. They don't know when war could erupt any seconds. And so they're constantly under vigil. So they have to be ready. Actually, martial arts really saved our lives. We came as an immigrant. We couldn't speak language. We were constantly teased on, picked on, and so on and so forth. And that was in Alameda and close to Oakland. And then we moved to San Francisco, and San Francisco at that time, if I was not in the martial arts, I would have died already. Because there were so many shootings in San Francisco at that time between the Chinese gangs, which is Hua Qing's with the Joe Boys, Dai Byung. And at that time, there was so much drugs, so much fighting. There was a time that we went to a party. It was called a dance. And the guys came out and started shooting. And I saw this one guy get shot in the cheek right in front of me, and his teeth fell out. Another guy got shot in the chest, and he fell to his knees, and he started to vomit blood. I couldn't believe that. You know,
was it a bit of a rough place where you lived?
It was a rough place. That time it was very rough. It was very rough. And, you know, two of my friends actually died. One guy got into a confrontation with Freddie in a bowling alley in the Sunset District and shot him, and he died. And it was not a good time. And I had a friend named Manny, and all these things was going crazy, and he took a gun and boom, shot himself. Oh, wow. And I said, okay, it's time for me to leave San Francisco.
When your family moved to America, was your father teaching martial arts in San Francisco?
We had a school in San Francisco, in Polk Street, actually. It was a very, you know, we were young and we were teaching at a young age. We had my father was teaching, and then there was a gentleman by the name of Muryang Choi, who was a master who taught us. And then we moved to LA, and there was a gentleman by the name of Master Jun Chong. And through, at that time, we were one of the biggest schools in Los Angeles. We had, at that time, probably at the peak, we had about 600 to 700 students. And, you know, we personally, you know, I straightened out my life. I've seen things that I shouldn't have at a young age. Got into a lot of fights at San Francisco. And we needed to prove ourselves, my brother and I. And we would go to tournaments every Saturday and Sunday. Right now, they'll have, you know, had tournaments maybe once a month or something. But at that time, Saturday, Sunday, there was tournaments all over the place. And when we fought, we didn't have like protection. We didn't have gloves. We didn't have...
was it like ITF or WTF? Was it, you know how you've got the Olympics, which is just the kicks? Was
no,
it with that as well?
Because in LA, there was a vast difference of styles. There was the Kenpo, there was the Kyokushinkai, there was the karate. It was all mixed. So we were going to open tournaments as well as taekwondo tournaments. When we fought, we didn't have any equipment. What we fought with is tapes. We just put tapes on our knuckles, tapes on our feet, and then you just go in and,
It didn't have the foot pads in those days, shin pads, no?
No foot pads.
No body armor, no protection here?
Well, actually, at that time, the hogu, the body protector, was made out of bamboos, not like right now.
Old school.
So when you kick, it hurts.
You got to condition your toes to kick that thing.
Exactly.
So you could punch into the face or just to the body?
It was all open.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's hardcore.
TKD tournaments was predominantly for the face and the chest, but the open tournaments is hands to the face, kicks all over. It was open. Yeah.
That sounds like it's as bad as best of the best too. Well, you do know that I trained in Taekwondo for many years. I don't know whether you can see that in my movements, but from the age of 13 to 17, it was Taekwondo for me.
Yeah, Scott, I know because I could tell your kicks were very clean, but I also know that you had trained many different styles as well.
Yes.
It's great.
But yeah, it's the clean technique, isn't it? It's the foot position. It's... I hate seeing a sidekick with the toes up. You want to get that heel up and turn the shoulder over a bit. I love a nice clean line.
Right.
You can tell, can't you? You can tell.
Exactly. So after the teaching and stuff like that, we started to gain a lot of clients who wanted to study martial art in our school at the Jiu-Jitsu school, and we were very close to Beverly Hills. So we touched so many people, celebrities and lawyers and doctors. We taught President Ronald Reagan's son, Jay Leno, Josh Brolin, Heather Graham, Sam Jones, who did Flash Gordon.
So if you were in LA and you wanted to learn Taekwondo, this is one of the best schools would have been school, yeah.
Yeah. It was packed, from families from Dionne Warwick to Barbara Mandel, Chaka Khan. I mean, you wouldn't believe it. So many people came to study. And because of that, we started to look into getting into the movies. And at the same time, Master Jun Chong wanted to make a movie, and he started to make a movie, and he hired us, and of course, with no money, and we didn't expect any money, but we learned a lot from Master Chong because he was doing movies now in Korea and Japan, Okinawa. So we started to get the, movie bug in a way. Did some work for Chuck Norris. In fact, that's...
Is this the Octagon? I was talking to Richard Norton about this, and he mentioned that you and your brother were involved in the Octagon in some way.
Yeah. Richard
must have been young then, right?
Yeah, we were young.
1980?
Yeah, we were very young.
Basically doing stunts, really, just,
stunts,
fighting stuff.
Yeah, Yeah, and then we did a movie with John Landis called Kentucky Fried Movie. Which is a parody. And
did you have a part in that, or was it just stunt work?
Yeah, we did stunt works, and my brother and I.
What was the first movie that we would have like properly got to see you in? Like to see that you could see it's you.
It's called Ninja Turf. Ninja Turf was something that we put together, and that was a really great experience because we didn't have, you know, there's low budget movies and there's no budget movies. So we didn't have any money to make this movie.
Yeah.
So we didn't have permits and we didn't have anything. And the director, it was about story about five guys. They're all, you know, they don't have parents and they get together driving around. And we needed a fight scene with Mexicans. And where are we going to fight? You know, we didn't have money to pay stunt guys. So where can we find these guys? So we went to Pondo and we found some Mexican gang, actually.
All right, the real deal.
Real deal. And I said, hey, guys, you know, we're doing a movie. You want to do a fight scene with us? And he goes, what you say, man? I said, we're doing a movie. You want to do a movie with us? He goes, is that right, S.A.? What are you paying? I said, case of beer? It's case of beer. Then he goes to his home. He's going, okay, man, let's do it. This will be cool.
It wasn't the fight sequence, was it?
It was a fight sequence. Disguised, and you had to fight.
How did they get on with the choreography? Or did they not bother?
I'm going to cut you up real good. Kill it!
We got to get him. Come on.
There was a Chinatown parade. And so we took the camera and we shot all the Chinatown parades and stuff. And we looked at each other and we go, you know, we got the footage, but there's none of our principal in this footage. So it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, you know what? Okay. Let's take the car and go behind the floats. And we went the last float. We parked our car behind the float. And as they were going in, and we just drove our car into the parade. And next thing you know, whoop, 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 whoop.
Police.
Oh, yeah. You know, I got arrested. We all got arrested. And I turned around to my, cameraman. I said, did you get it? And at the end of the day, Ninja Turf was sold.
Did you make a profit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most important thing. It's show business. Yeah.
The guys who produce Halloween and those kind of movies, they bought it. Because I got into a situation with this guy. He was a Roca master. He is choice tournament in Beverly Hills. And he was fighting with my brother. And all of a sudden, the Roca guy charged my brother and kneed him on his thigh. And so my brother went out of the ring, and this Roca guy followed outside of the ring, and he was going to do an axe kick to my brother's face. And I jumped in and I went, boom, you know, and all everything, the whole broke out. Everybody up and people were coming, and it was big fights happening. And there was another guy who came to Master Heel Choi and started to mouth off and disrespect him. Master Hugh Choi went like, boom!
Oh, no.
Like, I mean, it was a huge fight. And then everything broke out. And then I, you know, went to that guy, the road guy. And I said, you know, I'm sorry I hit you. But it was out of the ring and you were about to ass kick my brother. And I couldn't let you do that. And I thought this guy would say, you know what? Come on, let's go outside. Let's go outside. But he didn't say that. He said, I'm so sorry. He said, I'm so sorry. I was taught and I was trained that unless my coaches say stop, I'm trained to go continuously until somebody says stop. And that's how I was trained. He bowed to me and said, I'm so sorry, you know. And I said, wow, now this guy's a warrior. And why I share this story with you, because after many years later, in 1980, there was five guys who made it to the Korean Olympics. Okay. One guy from Chicago, one guy from Whittier, one guy from San Diego, one guy from San Francisco, and that guy, Roga, made the team. And five of us went to Korea and fight. And, you know, what was great about that was because he was my enemy and became my closest friend.
So this was the inspiration for Best of the Best?
Actually, it was. It was. Yeah.
And heart and soul of the Korean team. If you had any doubt about why he's the most feared fighter in the sport today, just take a look.
When I first heard of it, and I remember it, as I said, vividly, it was about 13. And I remember I'd seen Bloodsport and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing Best of the Best. I think I'd seen the trailer. And I remember in my mind thinking, I don't know about this film. I don't know if I'm going to like it. It doesn't look like what I think I'm looking for. And I think at the time I wanted my martial arts movies to be kind of, you know, underground tournaments and, you know, larger than life and Enter the Dragon and all the rest of it. And because it had a very realistic way about it, and it's basically a drama, it's a sports drama, isn't it, really? I didn't quite fancy it, but when I watched it eventually, it blew me away. And it's because it's the emotional journey of the characters, especially your character that he goes on, that just makes it so much better than the rest of the movies that were coming out at that time, you know, martial arts films. I wouldn't even call it a martial arts film. I'd call it a sports drama. What intrigues me about it is two things. And you were a producer on Best of the Best as well as coming up with the story. Is that right? Or
right.
Yeah. So my first question is, how did you come up with the story, which you kind of touched on before, a bit more of that. But the second question is, how in the world did you get a stellar cast like that? I mean, brilliant actors, James Earl Jones, Chris Penn, Eric Roberts, and, you know, incredible cast to get. Please let me on your secrets.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to do was because I wanted to elevate the martial arts genre. And I took my experience from 1980, the Korean Olympics, and what I have experienced out of that. And I start writing. And at the time, one of my students, his name is Scott Franks. Scott Franks is one of the top writers in the industry. He wrote iRobot, Out of Sight, Get Shorty. And he helped me. He helped me and to kind of structure it and do this. And when I did Best of the Best, because after I did Ninja Turf, I did a movie called Silent Assassin with Sam Jones and Linda Blair, who was the exorcist. And we made money on that. And so what happened was Sony wanted to buy Silent Assassin. And I said, look, I'm sorry, we already sold it. Then he goes, oh, that's a shame. We wanted to buy that. And I said, but I have something that is a little bit different. You might be interested. And he said, the executive said, Sony said, and said, tell me, what is it? I said, it's called Best of the Best. And I told him the story. And he goes, do you have a script? I said, I have a script. I sent it to him. 1 week, Oh, 1 week. They said, we're in.
Wow.
1 week, yeah.
Wow.
And so after Sony, I wanted to make sure the acting was important for me, because this was not a really a straight fight movie, but it was more of a drama mix, you know. And so the first person that we reached out to was James Earl Jones. If we get James Earl Jones, I knew that other people would come on board.
Very smart.
So, yeah. So we brought in James Earl Jones. Eric Robert came in. Chris Penn.
How did you convince James Earl Jones? Was it just, I like the script, I'd like to play this character?
He loved the story. He loved the story.
And at this point, was it a low budget movie or did it have a decent budget? I feel like Best of Best 2 probably had more money, right?
Yeah, but we still had we didn't have a lot of money. We did it, but it was okay. We put it about 6.5 mil and Sony paid half. And Sony basically at the time, you know, they didn't think nothing of this movie. They wanted to do a limited release and do a...
like a limited theatrical.
Yeah, for, VHS.
In those days, the video market was huge anyway, wasn't it?
Right. And interesting enough, Sony didn't see it. They did a limited release, but the rentals went crazy.
Yeah.
And did a lot of money. But our revenue really came out of the international. And it was huge. It was huge.
So you decided to go more the acting route, even though there's a team of five Taekwondo guys. Yeah. You're probably the only one with real martial arts experience. Did you have any concern about whether the other actors could pull off, you know, being Taekwondo guys? Did Chris Penn have a boxing background?
Yeah, he did. Chris had a boxing background. But, you know, what I love about Chris was his attitude.
Oh, yeah. Especially the character he plays, the cowboy.
You going number one or number two?
Drop dead.
It was so fun to work with him. And he had a chip in the shoulder, you know?
Yeah.
He was like, you know, he and his entourage was working out and, you know, training and stuff. And I was walking by and Chris goes, hey, Philip, let me see what you got. I said, Chris, stop. He goes, no. Let me see what you got. Let me see how hard you could kick. I said, Chris, stop. Then he goes, oh, man, you're chicken shit. Come on, let me see, right? So he had a pad, right? I said, okay, hold tight. And I did my best kick.
Was it back kick?
Yeah, stepping back.
Cool. Yeah.
And I knocked the wind out of him. And ever since that, he became my best friend. And Eric worked his butt off training. He got ripped.
Yeah.
And my brother training everybody. And it was really a good time, you know. Everybody was into it.
Just pulling off your...
Yeah.
That's the way he takes that kick. That guy there is great.
Yeah.
This really impressed me. Bear in mind, this is the first time I've seen you. And this kick that you do on the cigarette here. That's amazing. Because I'd seen it, obviously, people doing hook kicks, but never a side kick. I've never seen it like that.
Yeah. And, you know, all these guys, the stunt guys, they were terrific. They were really, really terrific, you know. And I always... respect our stunt guys, because a lot of people in the industry, you know, they don't respect them, you know, and that's not cool for me. They make everybody look great.
It's the stunt guys that, you know, 50% of the trailer for a movie is those guys.
Exactly, and they take the hits, and, you know, stunt guys are like brothers. They're really watch out for everybody, and yeah.
You back kick a guy in a minute, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, bang. That's a good back. That looks like you hit him quite hard.
Yeah.
That's a nice back kick. Brilliant. You won't see a better back kick than that, Philip. I don't think.
But you do a beautiful back kick, jump back kick.
I've got a good back kick. But
you do.
That's because of the taekwondo, you see.
Absolutely.
Was it always the plan to have your brother play Dehan?
Yeah. Because I know his rhythm, you know. And one of the things that I really wanted to focus on best of the best movies for me is creating lines. When I say lines, is there's an invisible visual line. If the kick is beautifully executed, there's a line designed by the form of your kicks. You know, sometimes if you don't extend it, the line doesn't look good. It looks like a terrible kick. But if it's, you know, the kick is stretched out and pointed out, then it looks beautiful and powerful. So I always focus on line. And by the way, Scott, you have beautiful lines, your kicks.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's true. And it's very clean.
I appreciate that.
And the second thing is rhythm.
Yeah.
So if you look at the sequence, it's like pop, 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 pop. It's not like pop, 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 pop. There's a certain rhythm. Yeah.
Different staccato and timing.
Exactly.
But you and your brother, you work so well together, obviously. The agility that you both have, the speed and the nimbleness on your feet. I mean, it's a pleasure to watch. How old were you at this point, Philip?
I think I was about 28, I believe.
Would you say you're in your prime?
Yeah, I would say so.
Amazing to watch.
There's a kick that my brother does a spin heel kick on me. I think this is the one, right? This one.
Yeah.
That was a real hit.
Oh, it was?
Oh, big time.
What? So this shot here was going to be a real hit?
Yeah.
Should have kept it in. Should have seen the hit.
Right there, see?
Oh, that shot there, I see.
Yeah, right there. And you notice, because you're not only a martial artist, and an actor and director and producer, Scott, he did not hit me with his heel.
Yes.
He slapped me. Yeah. So I would not get hurt.
Yeah. Because it's meant to be a spinning hook kick with the heel.
That's right.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, you know, when I'll throw a front kick, whenever I'll do a kick, I'll try a hit with the flat of the foot.
Right.
Of course, if you can hit with the ball of the foot, even better. Right. Yeah, definitely not the heel, right?
Exactly.
But you guys, you're going to be so precise. I'm sure you can just put your foot wherever you needed it to be at speed. Yeah. But it's a wonderful film because it really is truly emotional by the time you get to the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, it literally made me cry, this film. it really did.
Yeah.
Because you really feel for the character. And it's the way the bad guy, Dehan, the way he apologizes as well, the way he regrets what he did.
Yeah.
And through battle, he comes to terms with what he did and then apologizes for it. It's very touching. And that's what elevated this movie from the rest.
Yeah, but as you notice, that fighting, it was not traditional Taekwondo. We did the elbows, we throwing, so it was more cinematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, breaking is more on the Kyokushinkai side. So we wanted to make a cinematic movie, not just a Taekwondo movie.
We have a spectacular contest for you tonight. The Coliseum's newest...
It was 1992, we did the Best of the Best 2. And my thought was this. Let's not have just fight between Taekwondo or Kung Fu or, you know. I wanted to bring in various different disciplines from all over the world and have a competition in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
And Wayne Newton says, you know, he goes, there's only one rule. There are no rules, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
2 years after that, UFC comes on board, mixed martial arts, and
Vegas.
At that time in Vegas, and at the time, they said, there's only one rule. There are no rules.
So as real as it gets.
So in a way, I'm sure other people thought of it, but I'm the one who created that UFC type of fight in cinema.
You were preempting what was to come.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have much input behind the camera when it came to the fights?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the camera angles, it's a collaboration, you know, between the DPs and the directors and so on. So, you know, I cannot take credit for 100%, but I know what works and what doesn't work. So it's been a good collaboration, definitely.
Did you put on muscle for this part?
Oh, you're training? Yes, oh, absolutely. Yep.
Did you want to look bigger, more muscular for the part, or?
I didn't want to be like Hulk, you know?
Yeah.
I think the martial artists have a different physique opposed to a weightlifter. It's a different, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you need to be lean
and nimble,
rather than bulky, yeah.
But you're in phenomenal shape. You look great. And you can still obviously move.
Yeah, at the time, just train every day. Every day.
This was interesting. This is like a traditional kung fu type guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I say, I watched this one in the cinema and loved it. And when it came out on VHS, I like that sequence there. I would watch it over and over again. I'm a martial arts film geek. I mean, I just can't get enough of this stuff. And especially back then, in the early 90s, when I was a teenager, I mean, this was what it was all about for me.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved it.
What was interesting was that I was in Germany, right? And I didn't know if people watched this movie or not, right? And I got off the plane and there was all these security guards in Germany, right?
Yeah.
And one of them looked at me and goes, Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee, yeah.
And it was Tommy Lee. And I said, whoa, interesting, you know.
It travels. They love martial arts films in Germany. I've got loads of fans in Germany. They love this stuff.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Germans as well, still to this day, they love physical media. So they will go out and they will buy DVDs, Blu-rays. They make a point of it where other parts of the world, they're not so bothered anymore, but they still do in Germany, which is great.
Right.
I love this little move here that you do, where you spin back and then you do a nadaban. Yeah. Brilliant. Slick taekwondo footwork. And how was it working with Ralph Muller?
Ralph was great. Ralph is great. Really good guy. Really enjoyed working with him. He's strong as an ox. He's very close with Arnold. So Arnold came by the set and... It was good.
Well, he had a nice part in Gladiator not long after this, didn't he, I suppose?
That's right, yeah.
And how was it for him doing the fighting? Because obviously he's a bodybuilder. I'm not sure if he's got any fighting background.
But we train. He trained. Yeah. We always put everybody into training before anything. And, you know, choreograph all the things in advance. And train just that. So once they get on the screen, then they know what to do. And because he's an athlete, you know, he picked that up really quick. And what was extraordinary was that though he's so big, he was very fluid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's what most people don't understand about making martial arts films, really, is that it's more like dancing, isn't it, than real fighting. It's choreography. You're working with the other guy as a partnership. You are in unison. Like Hugh Jackman was, obviously, I worked with him on Wolverine, and he has a big song and dance background, you know, the theater, the musical theater. He was brilliant at fight scenes because he could just remember the choreography.
Yeah.
How many days did you spend fighting in that arena?
I would say about three weeks, probably.
And how long was the shoot for the entire film? How long was the shoot for Best of the Best One?
Best One, I think it was 8 weeks.
That's quite a lot. I mean, it was different back then, I know, but it's still quite good.
Best Two was same, about 8 weeks. But I think, you know, we did a lot of prep. I'm just, you know, anything for me, I said, you know what, let's prep more than, you know, what we need to do. Because if we do a prep, then the shoot will be just a piece of cake. But if we don't, you know, practice before, then it's going to be a nightmare. So.
You directed Best of the Best 3 and 4. What led to that?
For an Asian American guy who nobody would wanted to hire me, I wanted to take the leap and said, you know, this is something that I could do. What happened was after Best of the Best 2, I got a call from A. Kidman Ho and wanted to meet me. And I said, who are you? I don't know who you are. And he goes, why don't you just come to meet my partner? And then who's your partner? He goes, why don't you just come in? I said, who's your partner? And he says, my partner is Oliver Stone. Uh-huh. And we want to meet you. So I met with Oliver Stone and Alex Ho. And I had a script that I wrote with a friend of mine. It was called Cato. And it had nothing to do with Green Hornet. And then he liked this story and he brought John Woo. So they're the one who brought John Woo into the United States. And I got a 3-picture deal from Warner Brothers. And John Woo was supposed to direct. But then, unfortunately, Warners, you know, they didn't know John Woo. And they said something that was really uncool. He said, you know, why do you want to use these kind of guys? They don't even shoot sync sound.
Yeah.
Because
why do you want to use one of the best action directors to have ever walked the face of planet Earth?
But then, and they kind of, you know, for me, I think that it was disrespectful because they didn't offer him a lot of money. It was almost like steal. And that was not cool.
So were obviously a big fan of John Woo. You were watching his movies.
Yeah. And then Universal heard about it and made an offer to John Woo with Van Damme, Hard Target.
Yeah.
And I lost John Woo because of that.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So anyways,
that's hard to live with, isn't it? That's a disappointment right there.
Exactly. But it's okay, you know, what are you going to do? And then I get a call from Weinstein, you know, saying, hey, Philip, we want to do Best of the Best 3. I said, you guys want to do Best of the Best 3? He goes, yes. And I said, look, Fox has it. You know, they have the first round of refusal. So I don't know if we could do that. Then he goes, just get it out. And I said, okay, I could try. But I have one request. Then he goes, what is that? And I said, if I get it out, I'm going to star in it, I'm going to produce it, and I'm going to direct it. Are you okay with that? Silence. He goes, just get it out. Yeah!
I told you I didn't want any trouble.
And next thing you know, I get another phone call from Weinstein and says, we want to do Best of the Best 4. I said, you got to be kidding me. I don't have a script. I don't have an idea. I don't have anything. We don't care. You write it, you direct it, you produce it, you star in it. We'll write you a check. And so we put a script together. He wrote me a check, left me alone, and made Best of the Best 4. Those things don't happen in Hollywood. You know what I mean?
Well, it seemed it was very easy for you to get the first Best of the Best off the ground, it seems. And then 3 and 4, pretty easy as well. My first film that I produced, Accident Man, and I wrote it as well. As soon as we got the script to the right people, bang, it was done, and we were making it before we knew it. And I thought, that's okay. It's always going to be like that. And I have to say, there's been other projects I've been trying to get off the ground, and for whatever reason, it's been like pulling teeth. Very, very frustrating.
Yeah.
It can be very difficult.
It's very difficult, but I, you know, to the listeners on this podcast and the video cast, I would just recommend one thing. Don't give up. If you want to do this and you feel it in your heart and people could say, no, you know, you're not good for you. You're not good enough. You're not, you know, whatever. Don't listen to those things, because if somebody like me, if I could do it, you guys could do it. You know, and I think that's one of the most important thing is believing in yourself and not giving up.
Brilliant words. You know? I can completely agree and second that motion. But don't forget to work really hard.
Yeah, we have to work really hard. Yeah. You know, and I know, Scott, you know, I see your work, and I know that you put so many hours into that. I could see it, you know, and you have passion, and I know that you worked your butt off, and that's what it takes, because nobody else is going to do it for us, and, you know, and I saw some of your younger days in YouTube, and I knew it, you know. I said, you know, this guy, he's going to do it, he's going to make it, he's going to do, you know.
Did you know it really good? I'm not sure I did. I wanted it. I wanted it badly, though. I wanted it badly. I didn't know if I was going to get it. Like some people, they know they're going to do it. I never knew I was going to do it, but I wanted it badly. So I put in as much work as I could to make sure that I got it. But I want to thank you, Philip, because, you know, those teenage years, very, you know, where you make the decisions about what you want to do with life and who you want to become and what you want to do in the future. And you're part of it, the best of the best. Franchise there has been watched many, many times in my household growing up. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Vice versa. I have watched most, you know, every one of your pictures as well.
And you did. I'm sorry about the bad ones.
No.
Most of them are good. There's the odd one here and there. But, you know, just trying to.
We all have that, you know.
Which do you prefer, directing the action or directing the drama?
I think it's got to be overall, because it's about balance. If the drama is great and the action is bad, then that's not good, you know?
Yeah.
But action is great, but the drama sucks, that's not good. So I think I always try to find the balance. And like when I did Best 3, it was very, very dicey, because it was about racism. And I did Best of the Best 3 because I was in the plane and there was a US magazine, and it was about a skinheads took this Asian kid and they stomped him to death. So the kid died. And I was reading this article, and that article says, you know, before he this kid died, what he said was, "I'm sorry to come to your country." And that really hit me.
Wow.
So I wanted to do best three. It was about, you know, it, for me, it was not about racism, but it's not about bad guys and good guys. You know, blacks are bad, whites are bad, Asians are bad. I never see that. I don't see it that way. It's not the color of the person who's good or bad. It's the character of the person,
yeah.
You know? And with all this pandemic and all this riot, yeah. It's not about race. It's about characters, you know? And so the writer wrote at the end where my character, Tommy Lee, kills the white supremacist at the end. And I said, no way. Tommy Lee is not going to kill this guy. Because if I do that, then, you know, this is about racism and killing each other. That's not the kind of movie that I want to make, you know?
Yeah, it's a vicious circle. It's a vicious circle. So somebody has to stop it at some point. Exactly. No matter how much hate has led to that point, someone has got to be brave enough to shut it down, right?
Yeah. And talking about that, there was a wonderful... A wonderful, wonderful picture that I wanted to come to share with you. It was from UK. There was a major protest and there was a lot of fights happening between the whites and the blacks in the UK. And I saw a picture of a guy, he was a black gentleman, and he went in and he picked up this white guy over his shoulder and took him out to save this guy in this melee.
I saw that.
Things like that changes people. Things like that changes countries. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, like, because the coronavirus came from China. I'm not Chinese, but they go, hey, you know, Asians or what have you.
Asian, yeah.
And a lot of people are coming down on Asians. And
have you seen that there's more racism towards Asians recently than because of this coronavirus thing?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But you know, the people who come down on Asians, and my philosophy is this: hey, you could hate me, I'm okay with that. But if I see you in a burning car and you're stuck, I would come and rescue you because that's who I am.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the way we change the world.
Yeah.
So as martial artists and celebrities, and there's a lot of people who's following you, Scott. So yeah. We need to ingrain certain thoughts, because they look up to you and they follow you, everything that you do. So we need to be mindful as to what we do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Spoken like a true martial artist there, Philip. That's wonderful for you to say that. Actually, I want to say, because I read something about you recently about... I read that one of the inspirations to make Best of the Best was because one of your students was disappointed that you were killing people in one of your movies. Maybe it was the Turf Ninjas, and that was, you wanted to send out a better message with Best of the Best. Actually, that really struck a chord with me, because I mean, if you've seen any of my movies, a lot of them, they are quite violent and a little bit mean-spirited. Because I want to entertain above all else. And, you know, sometimes I do think to myself, maybe I need to think about that a bit more. Because, people do look up to us in this position.
Actually, I'll tell you the story what happened. After the Ninja Turf, Silent Assassin, I was in the restroom in our studio, Dojang. And the kids came out, and they didn't know I was in the restroom. And the two kids started talking, and it was, hey, right. Did you see Master Yi's movie? And one kid goes, yeah, what did you think? Goes, yeah, it was great, but, you know, he teaches us to not to hurt people and not to fight, but he was killing everybody. And when I heard that, I started laughing quietly. But yeah. Then right after that, I said, wow, he's right. These kids were right. I'm teaching something, and yet I'm doing something else. So I said, one day I will make a movie just for kids. And I promised that I would make a movie for kids one day. And many years later, after Best of the Best and so on and so forth, I made a movie called Underdogs, Underdog Kids. It was specifically for kids. Adults would like it, but kids love it. So, you know, I fulfilled my obligation.
No, these films are very important. I always say that one of the best martial arts films ever made is The Karate Kid. And obviously the fights in that are terrible. Yeah. But the message of martial arts is pure and as good as it's ever been. And that's why it's an amazing film. And, you know, you can just, obviously we know how many people that film touched. So, yeah, a lot to think about there. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Philip, for coming on my show. I really appreciate it. You're an amazing martial artist. An amazing person, and thanks for sharing those words with us.
And Scott, thank you. First of all, thank you for having me. And I'm going to tell you something. You worked hard, and you're up there right now, and I'm so proud of you. I know it wasn't easy. I know it's not easy. You know, it's a difficult climb to the top, and so I really applaud you. 100%, and just keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Oh, thank you, Philip. I really appreciate that. Yes. And in terms of the violent movies, what can I do? I've just been the main villain in Ip Man 4, and that guy was as racist as he gets. But, you know, I was helping to tell the director's story doing my part.
And it's a character. It's a character.
Exactly, the actor in me enjoys it.
Exactly. And you did well. You really did well. You were mean. Yeah.
I was very mean, and I perhaps enjoyed it a bit too much.
No, but then if you did not have the antagonist, if the antagonist is not strong, then the movie flops. So,
the hero is only as good as the villain.
Exactly.
Yeah. You need a good villain to bounce off to defeat.
Yeah.
So everyone can have a good cheer at the end.